This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Nobody Cares, The Story of the World from Safety Man. And joining me from near Chicago is the Safety Man himself, Frank Safety Man Berg. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
This is a fascinating idea. Of course, the title is kind of, I won't say off-putting, but kind of scary to think that maybe we live in a world where no one really gives a flip about how people get through life and do so safely. Your background, you have a background as an occupational safety and health administrator, among other things, and safety became a very important passion to you when you were younger. Explain to my listeners a little how this got started and why you have a passion for safety.
I'd be happy to. I've spent my entire career, my entire life in safety. Therefore, the safety man moniker. I started off very early in my life, with a traumatic episode where my best friend and I went sledding when we were in junior high school. We went sledding down a hill, and I got down to the bottom of the hill, And I turned around to look at my friend who was, coming down after I went down the hill. And I saw him heading for a tree. And then I saw him hit the tree. And then I saw that he wasn't moving. Ooh. And I ran up to him, and he was very seriously injured. He had a serious head injury and a brain injury. And he was, I remember I grabbed him and took him to the top of the hill to where there was a highway. And stopped the car and got him into a car. And he went to the hospital and gratefully, had surgery and is still living to this day.
Wow.
I never forgot that episode. And I realized at that moment how quickly a life can change and what can happen to people in just a second.
Absolutely. I as a parent, was probably overly protective of my children, and I think probably we grew up in the same time frame. You mentioned Leave It to Beaver and Gunsmoke, how evil is always overcome by good, and how those things maybe have impressed us. That's also mentioned in your book, how that you grew up in that same time frame, and how there always seemed to be an optimistic outlook to the outcome, that it was going to be positive. That impacted you as well.
Well, that didn't happen to me. In TV, everything works out great and everything turns out perfect. But in my life, it hasn't been that way. And even after that incident, I felt like guilty and I felt like what they call survivor's remorse. Mm-hmm. Like here I was fine and yet my friend was injured, seriously injured, and, he was never going to be the same. And I also had a sense that I was blamed, and I really didn't do anything wrong, but I went to school, and the kids said, what happened? And I felt like, they were looking to me like I had done something. And even his family, I felt like his family blamed me, like, if he hadn't been with the safety man or with Frank, that this wouldn't have happened, and I had all this guilt, and I was just so young, and it was horrible. I could hardly bear it, and I never forgot it, and I think that whole incident made me want to give back or change my life to make me want to invest my life into safety to try to protect other people, to try to, pay back from the guilt that I felt.
I think that's a very common and understandable situation, especially anyone that has any normal feelings towards others. There are individuals who could walk away from that. I have relatives in my family that seem to be able to, absent themselves from the trauma of some of the things of the past. Maybe they've had to do that in order to survive. Your book is over almost 400 pages. That's a lot of material. Did it get accumulated over your lifetime? Was it a recent decision to sit down and pen your content? How did that come about?
Well, you know, I've been doing it for many years, for 48 years, and a lot of times people say, well, how do you do it? You know, how do you stand it? You know, because I'm always investigating a fatality where someone is killed or where someone is maimed. And so you go there, like the things you read about in the newspaper, I'm a person that goes there and does the investigation. And so, you know, it's terrible, you know, you get used to it, but it's still terrible. And then people ask me over all those years, you know, number one, how can you do it? And I say, well, you just get used to it. It's your job. And the second thing that they ask me is, what did you learn? What have you found out? And I say, well, unfortunately, what I found out is that people really don't care. Nobody cares. That's what the title of the book is. Because, and the reason I say that is not because people don't have feelings or don't have a heart, but they don't change anything. And I guess the book is about our culture, because we live in a culture where we don't want to change and we don't want to face up to things. We like to, you know, have that Ozzie and Harriet attitude where everything's going to be fine, but everything isn't fine. And then if someone falls off a building because they don't have a guardrail, well, then you would think, oh, everybody will put up guardrails. We're not going to let anybody else fall off a building. But then I go out every day and find situations where there aren't guardrails or where they don't have lanyards and they don't have fall protection still today.
Wow.
You know, and it hasn't really changed that much. And it has something to do with our nature, our human nature.
I have instances in my family history. My brother-in-law, who is a special needs, had a serious health issue about 4 or 5 years ago. He lives with us and is a wonderful guy, but had a serious health issue, and we took him to the hospital, had to get him there 3, 4, maybe 5 times in order to get him admitted, and he was having serious crisis. And the people in the hospital, the doctors and so on, just kind of looked at him and said, well, take him home. He's fine. And it is something that is alarming when you find professionals who are not able to follow through with compassion and with solutions when you go to them for help.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's something I'd like to say about my profession in this interview, and that is that the safety job is really hard. Because what happens is, if you're a safety guy, you're not running the company. If you're lucky, you've got, you know, a staff position.
Right.
And then it isn't long before you find out that the money is not in safety, that the money is in production. And so a lot of times what happens is you answer to higher ups, and the higher ups sort of steer you in a different direction away from safety, and they get tired of having you complain about this, that, and the other thing that's going to slow down production. And so what happens is that it's very hard to maintain yourself as a safety person, as a safety man. And just one other thing, I've always been independent. You know, so I worked for OSHA for 18 years, which is where I learned everything. And it was wonderful there. But since that time, I'm completely independent. And so I have the advantage of not having any pressure on me, you know, towards production or profits or management.
That's a wonderful position to be in, no matter what your career or decisions are in life, for certain. I feel that I can relate to that as well in what I have chosen as a profession. You talk about architects, engineers, and you dealt with them on a regular basis. What did you find the most alarming or surprising about those professions?
They don't teach them about safety when they go to their colleges and their universities. They teach them to be fantastic engineers, where they can engineer all kinds of improvements and upgrades and retrofits. And the same thing with architects. They give them computer programs where they can put together buildings on a computer before they're actually built. But they don't often, I won't say in every case, but they often don't consider the safety factor. So they might design a machine and not consider that a person has to use it. When I first started doing this, I was amazed by that, because I would go into the factories and they would have machines that were operated by buttons, and they would have the buttons up in the air. And so the people that were operating the machines would have to press the buttons over and over again, you know, to make the parts.
Right.
But the problem with that is, if you have your hands up in the air all day, the blood doesn't flow to your hands. And so their hands would deteriorate, the nerves would deteriorate, and they'd suffer, you know, workers' compensation claims. And so that was early in my career when we started thinking about, well, maybe we should put the buttons in an area that's what we call a neutral posture, a comfortable posture, where a person can comfortably do that job without having, you know, a negative effects on the physiology over time.
You, in your career, have you looked at the impact of, say, computers and the technical side of injuries and other stresses on the human body?
Yes, I've been led to be a human factors safety engineer and an ergonomist. And in fact, I wrote a standard at ANSI, the American National Standards Institute, the first standard ever on ergonomics. That was for construction. But in general, we don't take enough time to consider, you know, what we're doing and what our position of our body is in relation to the tasks that, you know, that we're, you know, involved in every day. So little things can make a difference, you know, having the right chair, having the right height for the screen, and also taking breaks so your eyes, you know, are not fatigued over time. There's a lot of little things you can do, and I see it all the time. I walk in. The one that drives me the craziest is when I go to a hotel. For some reason, when you check into a hotel or a motel, they want those people to stand all day long, and checkers too. And they're standing all day. And then a lot of times the workstation is real low because they want you to see something when you're walking in there. And I look at them and I can see the pain on their face as soon as I go in there. I mean, maybe they're smiling at me, but I can see the pain. I can see that they're uncomfortable. I can see them moving from foot to foot. And I know that they've been standing all day and their workstation is not constructed so it's, you know, comfortable for them. And as a result of that, they're suffering. And remember, I'm seeing them for 5 minutes, but they're doing that day after day. And I don't know if you've noticed, but those workers, those hotel workers, they work shifts. Sometimes I see them at night when I check in, and they're still there in the morning.
Yes.
And I can't even imagine standing there in that position all day long and the discomfort and the suffering that they, and also what's going to happen when they get older, you know, there's going to be a price to pay for that.
Absolutely. One thing that comes to my mind, and probably not, that's not covered in your book, but I've wondered, just from a personal curiosity standpoint, whether you've consulted with any, say, furniture manufacturers or business manufacturers on that side of the equation.
You know, over the years that I've been doing this, and one of the reasons I wrote the book is because I've been everywhere. I actually don't know anyone that's been as many places that I've been. I was, not long ago at one of the largest furniture manufacturing plants in the country and in the world. And I've been in mines and tunnels and grain elevators and foundries and factories of every kind. It's hard to name a company that exists where I haven't been there and looked at their operation. And, you know, sometimes you can find things. You know, some companies do a good job. I don't want to paint them all with one brush. You know, some companies do a good job. But, you know, they have to answer to stockholders and the bottom line for profits. And usually something will slip through, and there can always be improvements. And there's very few places that I've gone where I haven't seen, you know, some areas that couldn't be upgraded.
Who is your reader? Who is it that you wrote this material or shared your story, your life story with? What do you hope to achieve from it?
Well, I think that people are quite naive about the dangers of our world. I think that a lot of people do think that we still live in a Leave It to Beaver world, and they don't appreciate the dangers that they face each day when they live their lives. And I'm trying to tell them to be very watchful and careful, not just about their children, but themselves too. You know, if there's a drop-off or it's dark or even, you know, you go to the mailbox and it's close to the street, you know, you really have to think about everything, every task, every movement that you make more carefully if you want to protect yourself and your family. And a lot of the messages we get in our world today are the opposite of that. You know, do it now. You know, push yourself as far as you can. Take a chance. We're adrenaline junkies. You know, do this. You know, people, I know they're going to space tomorrow. You know, so everybody wants to, you know, take a chance. But then that's fine. You know, that's human nature too. But the trouble is you have to be aware of what the risks are and what the results can be. And if you look at the cost of medical care and the cost of workers' compensation in our world, you know, it's rising and rising. But no one's talking to them. The people that are making the commercials and that are, you know, writing the stories and are making the TVs and the movies, they're not talking to people in nursing homes or talking to people in hospitals. You know, they're talking to people that are, you know, exciting and young and full of life. But the truth is there's more of us than there is of them. And I'm trying to give a warning to people, you know, protect yourself, protect your family. You don't want something horrible to happen. And so that's what I'd like to leave the reader with and leave my life, you know, with, to make sure that people understand that there's a lot of risks out there and what the reality of the world is, and that, you know, a little planning and care can make a big difference. And that's what it's really about, is having planning and thinking about things. I saw someone yesterday, you know, skateboarding and without a helmet or without knee pads or elbow pads. And I was thinking, you know, as soon as I see that, I think, oh, one little, you know, pebble, one little crack in the walkway, and this person could be seriously injured, even though they're a young person. So,
yes,
you know, they should be wearing, you know, you'd want your kids to wear elbow pads and knee pads and a helmet. And I want everyone to do that. I don't want to see anyone, you know, be tragically injured or killed.
Very good advice. I have adrenaline junkies in my family, my grandkids, and my son even has done and participated in events that I just am so thankful they survived without any serious injury. My grandson, you know, went to the Grand Canyon and was doing all the foolish things that tourists do when they go to the Grand Canyon, and he just jumped off to some cliffs, I don't know, in Hawaii, that I don't know if he examined the end game or not, but grateful at this point none of them have been seriously injured. Your book, again, 390 pages, it's a wonderful work. How long did it take to complete, and where do we get copies of this?
Well, I spent more than a year and a half writing the book, but what's in the book is 47 years of my life. I try to put everything in there. I was at the World Trade Center the first time there was an explosion there. I know that we just had the anniversary. And I, like I said, I've been everywhere in almost every kind of industry, and I wanted to put it all down. I wanted to leave it behind, and I wanted to try to have a positive effect for safety in our world. You know, that's what it's about. That's why I try to be the safety man, and that's why I wrote the book. And if people would read it, and if it would make them more cautious and careful, it would save somebody from a tragic injury or a death. You know, that's all I'm asking for, and that's what it's about. It's not about being an author, especially, or trying to sell a bunch of books. I'd like people to read the book, and that's why I'm grateful for this interview today, because I hope that people will listen and maybe give it a try. It's on Amazon Kindle. You can go to Amazon and buy the book. It's on sale right now. You can get that book for 99 cents, if you can believe that. Like I said, it's not for profit. It's just to try to get the word out, and I hope it has a positive effect. And if it does, it would really satisfy me. It would make me feel very good about myself.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing your life story and also your passion for safety. You can also look on Mr. Berg's website, B-U-R-G, that is, and it is Safety Man, www.safetyman.com, and you'll find this book and other comments that he may share with the universe. Your local bookseller can order it in also if you request it by name. Nobody Cares, The Story of the World from Safety Man. Safety Man, Frank Safety Man Berg, thank you for sharing your story and your passion with us today.
Jay, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing Archway Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing. Join us again next week at noon Eastern.